This is Tea Earl Grey Heart, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. Hyde and Q. Hello and welcome to episode 43 of T. Earl Grey Heart, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. My name is Dave, and I am joined this week, as every week, by someone, according to shady calculations that are most probably wrong, would need an LED light source of 31.5 billion watts to shine a one lux light to my house. And that is my good friend over in Switzerland, Yannick. Hi, Yannick, how are you?
Hello. I'm kind of okay. I've got a cold. I'm much better than I was yesterday, which is the day we were supposed to record this podcast. So hopefully my voice is going to stay with me until the end of this show. Other than that, I'm perfectly okay.
You don't sound too bad this evening.
No.
So I can't imagine
than
how
yesterday.
Yeah, well, exactly. Can't imagine how badly you would have been yesterday.
Yeah,
but hey ho, it doesn't matter. Yeah. You're here now. That's what's important.
Yes, just for your information, I don't have 31.5 billion watt LED to shine, and one lux is not really not a lot anyway. So that wouldn't help you.
it wouldn't actually be a usable light source.
No.
I would agree with that. But yeah, 31.5 billion watts would probably heat up the world.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, probably blind everyone in Switzerland before it reaches you.
Well, how far are you from CERN? Because you could probably use the power source that runs the LHC to run.
Yeah,
that
CERN is in Geneva. So, what about building 871?
Yep, that'll do. That's the one I was thinking of. Yep.
Of course, yes. Mm-hmm. So, it is 135 kilometers from here.
Okay, that's not too bad then.
No.
Because the LHC runs, is it 25 kilometers across or round?
Huge.
It's part under Switzerland and part under France, isn't it? If I remember.
I don't know.
Oh. You're nowhere near it anyway, that's the point.
Yeah. Yes.
Anyway, so we are not talking about stealing electricity from large scientific institutions. We are here to review Star Trek The Next Generation, Season 1, Episode 10, Hyde and Q. And what an episode. Very, very odd.
Yes. Yes.
To say the least.
Long, slow. definitely not one of the best.
Yeah, no. So I'll tell you what, let's crack straight on with our review of that episode that I just mentioned. So in the teaser then, having dropped Deanna Troi's shuttlecraft off at Starbase G6, the USS Enterprise-D is fortunately close to the Sigma-3 solar system when its Federation colony transmits an urgent call for medical help. An accidental explosion has devastated a mining operation there. There are 504 colonists at that site.
Yeah, well, wonder what an accidental explosion could be. You know, those facilities are supposed to be secured, but
yeah,
it happens.
I suppose with any mining operation, there's always an element of risk, isn't
risk.
There? Yeah.
Even in the 24th century.
Yes. I would imagine, I don't know what they're mining, doesn't actually say, but I would guess that the mining technology hasn't changed that much. You're still prizing things out of faces, aren't you? So,
yeah, it's not really the subject of the episode anyway. So that's why they didn't maybe they didn't give too much thought to in it.
No, probably not. En route to the mining colony at warp 9.1, the Enterprise is once again trapped in Q's force field grid. Q appears as an Aldebaran serpent on the bridge of the Enterprise and informs the bridge crew that the Q Continuum, after studying their recent contact with humanity, are mostly impressed by them and wishes to discuss it. Picard urgently asks to wait until they've completed their mission, but Q demands that he abandon it. Q then changes into a Starfleet admiral.
Yeah, wasn't Aldebaran a planet of the other star thing?
If
we
do
have
not
any
know.
Star Wars fan listening or watching,
there's no mention of Star Wars.
Maybe I'm just imagining things.
It might just be a carry on from what we said last week about how a lot of these places and star systems and the like sound very similar to each other.
On Star Wars, it's Aldebaran, not Aldebaran.
Okay. No B.
No B.
Fair enough.
But yeah, names are very close to each other.
So, yeah, in that scene then, we saw Worf doing quite an amazing acrobatic jump over the security station to completely futilely point a phaser at Q. And I'm sorry, I know I keep going on about this, but I've got to say it again. Yar, as security chief, is once again responding to Worf's reaction before she kicks in and does exactly the same thing. And you even see her react to it. So Worf jumps over the wooden ledge thing, and you see Yar very quickly look across to Worf. In her mind, she's probably thinking, oh, crap, I should be doing this. And then she launches over it again and comes up beside him with her phaser pointing at Q.
Yeah, I guess I we know at the end of the season she will unfortunately... how can I say that?
Go?
suffer take a permanent leave of absence. And the reason why she actually asked to leave the show, and the reason was that she thought she was not given enough importance in the series, and that is a very good example of that, as in her character should have been the one who reacted first. And not Worf.
Yes.
And my guess is the producers and writers, they prefer to have Worf as the main security officer, you know.
Which like ultimately very strong comes Klingon. Anyway. Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely.
And so.
But I don't, like I say, I don't wish to harp on about her suitability as security chief. But I think as a character... as Natasha Yar, I don't think she's got it. She hasn't got what it takes to be the security chief of that of that ship.
Yes, I agree.
But whether that is the character or whether it's the actress, I don't know.
I really think it's the character. I really think it's the way they wrote the role. Mm. And that, it didn't suit her. And that's why she asked to leave the show at the end of the first season.
Yeah. Hey ho. Okay, so we're on to Act 1 then. Q starts mocking Picard and notices that Riker is somewhat amused by it. Riker says that he might find it amusing if they weren't on a mission to save suffering humans. Q retorts that humans are always suffering and dying, just as Worf starts to advance on him. Picard stops Worf, giving Q the opportunity to mock Worf as well.
Macro head, micro brain.
That was it. Yes.
Yeah.
And then Worf's trademark.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't know what, Q is on, but he is really on point with the mocks and the insult that he's throwing to pretty much everybody in that room.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he actually likes them, which is why he mocks them.
Yeah. I can't disagree with that. He certainly... Is it that he likes them or does he like mocking them? I think it's probably...
Both.
The latter. But you can see that as a character, as Q's character, he's really enjoying what he's doing because he knows he's getting right under the skin of person after person.
That and the fact that John DeLance is an awesome actor, and that makes a real, very, very interesting character and interesting.
Yeah, he is very good at what he does. He's also phenomenally annoying.
Yes, which proves that he's good.
Well, it proves it is good, but it also makes him an incredibly good enemy, villain.
Yeah, 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 absolutely.
Picard again says that he will listen to Q's offer of the realization of their impossible dreams, but only following their rescue mission. Q wonders why Picard doesn't trust him, and Picard begins to tell him, angrily and at length. After Q mocks Picard some more, he turns to ask Riker what he finds of Q's offer. Riker says they do not have time for Q's games, which triggers Q's excitement. He's really into the whole idea of turning this into a game.
Yeah, Riker should have done better.
Yeah. The thing is, though, with Q, it's almost as though you cannot say anything about anything, because whatever you say, he is going to twist it around to his own advantage.
Yeah.
Again, another reason why he is such a good villain. Q transports Riker, Data, LaForge, Yar, and Worf off the bridge onto a Class M planetoid before appearing before them in the uniform of a Napoleonic Marshal. Picard is left alone and unable to contact anyone in the ship, nor access any of the turbolifts.
Yeah, this planet looked like a set with a green screen and a few... styrene rocks.
Yeah,
I wonder if they didn't have the budget or if it was on purpose.
I don't know, but I put in my notes that it looked like one of the old original series.
Yes,
planetary sets.
It also looked like the the planet where they were beamed in. Was it in Encounter Alpha Point when they met the Ferengi for the first time?
Yes.
It's probably the same set.
It could well be, but yeah, it was very, very flat, very sparse, very polystyrene rock looking.
Yeah.
So yeah, very, very similar. But again,
I think original series, yes.
It is. Q colourfully engages them in a Napoleonic era campaign tent, offering Riker a drink that he identifies as an old-fashioned lemonade. Incredibly so, as he was just thinking about one. Drinks suddenly appear in the hands of the rest of the crew, seemingly again their favourites. Everyone examines and tries their drink, except Worf, who pointedly empties his glass and then smashes it to the ground.
Yeah, and Data, who looked at his drink and starting to start drinking and then, I don't know, realize that he didn't, it was an android and didn't have to drink.
Even though he doesn't have to, there's no reason why he can't.
No, and there's an episode later on in the series where he actually tries to get drunk, which he can't because it's not real alcohol anyway, but he's drinking prune juice and stuff like that and tasting those drinks with Guinan in Ten Forward. So we know you can ingest food and drinks.
Yeah. You mentioned about him getting drunk, which he can't do because he's an android, but he can be infected with a... I can't remember what the thing was.
Something water.
Yeah. In the naked now.
And reveal itself as being fully functional, yes.
Yes, and that. Yeah, let's not revisit that one. Oh, dear. Q declares that the point of his game will be to stay alive. He promises a great future for humankind if they win, but something disastrous if they lose. Furthermore, the game will be completely unfair, brushing off fairness as a human concept. Yar begins to protest, but Q transports her away into a penalty box. But, unbeknownst to the crew, she's really back on the Enterprise. He says that if anybody else violates the rules of the game, they will be put in the penalty box, displacing Tasha into nothingness, because there's only room for one in the penalty box.
Yeah. So, once again, Tasha is taken away from the action. So, yeah, back to what you were saying. I really think it was her character was written like that. And it seems to me like the writers, they really didn't want her to be the main security chief and main character, which is too bad because she's progressing in her acting and she's getting better.
I think they could have done a lot more with her as a character. I'm quite disappointed that if the producers are going down the route of effectively casting her out of the series, which essentially is what happened towards the end anyway, it just seems like a really backward move because, you know, we're talking mid-late 1980s. We've already had some incredibly pioneering television from the original series, having a woman of colour in an officer capacity.
On the bridge, yes.
On the bridge. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that Star Trek, the original series, celebrates the first interracial kiss on television between Kirk and Uhura. You know, as a franchise, it's televisually incredibly pioneering. So why would they then take this stance towards Yar? I mean, it could be that it was just they couldn't get on with her, but, you know, they could have determined that before they got 10 episodes in.
Yeah. I agree, yeah. I don't understand why they cast her as the chief security officer just to not use the character.
Mm. But then, if you look at other characters dotted around the ship, we're already on our third chief engineer.
Yes.
So it's not as... But there again, that they're not bridge crew, are they?
No.
So Argyle and McDonald, they're not bridge crew. No. So
they're only... Yeah. So they could have a different chief engineer every week.
At this point,
it really doesn't matter.
No.
It's not like Trip... Was the chief engineer and a main character.
Exactly. But unlike Enterprise, where pretty much all of the characters appear to be on the bridge pretty much all of the time, it does seem as though with the Next Generation, Crusher is nearly always in sickbay. And Argyle / McDonald are always in engineering. But if you look further down the line, when LaForge comes into the chief engineer's role, we see a lot more storylines pertaining to him, and he spends quite a bit of time on the bridge as well.
Yes. The Enterprise D is much bigger than the NX-01. and the crew is also bigger. So,
well, they have transporters, don't they? If engineering is that far away from the bridge, then just transport them up.
No, what I mean is that because the ship is bigger and the crew is a lot is also a lot bigger, then you might have people who can stay in engineering and not need to be on the bridge. While on the NX-01, the chief engineer pretty much did a lot of work in engineering because he didn't have a huge crew and then needed to be on the bridge for reasons.
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, the fact they have a bar on the Enterprise
there are actually more than one bar on the Enterprise. So there's 10 forward is on deck 10 and is the main bar, but there are many other bars on the Enterprise.
Oh right, okay, I didn't.
Which
I
we
didn't
never
realize.
See in the series, but you can see that on the technical manual.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there were no bars on the NX-01.
No.
In fact, there was barely a kitchen.
Do you remember when in the Naked Now, Tasha said to Troy that she wanted to buy something from the gallery or from the shop somewhere?
When they were talking about the dress that she was wearing of Troy's, yes.
Yes. And at the time we said that that was stupid because there's no shopping center on the Enterprise. Well, actually, there is. But we never see it in the series because they didn't have the budget for that. But
that is just fantastic. I suppose they could just replicate whatever they wanted to sell.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Or maybe they were selling, you know, mugs with the Enterprise, you know, Starfleet logo on there. Starfleet merchandising.
With the Enterprise D on one side and best captain ever on the other. Class.
Yeah.
Okay, then we're on to Act Two. Back on the Enterprise, Picard paces around the bridge, powerless to do anything. He laments that even the log entry system doesn't work, as it just feeds back and distorts his voice every time he tries to speak. Just then, Yar reappears on the bridge and explains her situation to Picard. Being controlled by Q's whims has left her off balance, and she's so fed up that she's on the verge of tears. Picard tries to comfort her, but she's ashamed of herself for even thinking about showing weakness, especially in front of the captain. Picard reassures her that showing emotion is not a sign of weakness, and Yar hints at what their relationship could be if he weren't captain.
Yeah.
That is just so inappropriate.
It's, I mean, it, coming from nowhere. I mean, it's just... What?
Yeah, I didn't understand that. I didn't know where that came from. I mean, to be fair, she is starting to work her way around the crew. So maybe, you know, she's bored with Data and... Oh, look, there's Picard. Let's have a go with him.
Yeah. I don't know. I was like, okay.
Yeah, that was just very, very awkward. In fact, something not dissimilar to that happens later on in the episode as well, which is really quite, really quite odd. But, yeah.
Yeah.
Suddenly, Q appears before Yar and Picard, apparently bored with the display the two officers have made, and says that Yar's penalty is now over. While seated in the captain's chair, he makes a Starlog entry for Picard, explaining that the real intent of his game is to test whether the ship's first officer is worthy of the greatest gift that Q can offer. They make a bet. Picard's command against Q's keeping out of humanity's path forever. Q then promptly tells Picard that he has already lost, as Riker will be offered something impossible to refuse. Now, I made a prediction.
Oh.
And I'm not going to say what it is because it was right.
what the heck is a Starlog entry? I mean, we've never heard the name Starlog entry.
No, I think that is the official term for Captain's log or the personal log or because it's not always the captain, is it? It could be the first officer, it could be the engineer, it could be the chief medical officer. But no, I've not heard it made as Starlog before. What was it referred to as?
It's the first time I heard the reference.
Earlier.
Starlog entry. Well, links to log on Memory Alpha.
Yeah, and even at the beginning of that act, when Picard's trying to do it, the review says log entry system. Doesn't say Starlog entry system. So, don't know.
But why not? I mean, Starlog. That's a fancy name. I like fancy names.
Or just find and replace everything and just call it a Starlog from now on. Meanwhile, down on the planetoid, Riker, Data and LaForge discuss the situation while Worf gathers reconnaissance. Apparently, aliens dressed in 18th century French uniforms are heading their way, armed with ancient muskets.
I found it very strange that LaForge was just casually leaning on a rock and watching Worf, and just Worf being Worf, moving like as if it was inside a battle or something, and LaForge was I can see him. Oh good, he's seen him. Yep, wait, yes, good work, Worf.
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? Because this is obviously Worf's thing. He's a warrior, so he's the kind of person that will, hide and view and determine strategy and stuff like that. Yeah. Whereas the other ones just seem to be kind of like sitting there and almost laughing at him. I felt sorry for Worf.
Yeah, me too.
Despite the fact that everybody was probably enjoying themselves, including Worf, more than they would have admitted.
Yeah. It added to the weirdness of this episode.
Again, the set they're on didn't help the situation. Because if the Enterprise crew are trying to hide from this legion of French soldiers, when they're really only being hidden by one rock in the middle of this expanse of wasteland, it's not really a game, is it?
No, but you said it wouldn't be fair.
It's not even fair, it's stupid.
Yeah. Well, the soldiers didn't look like they were very bright either.
No, they didn't look like they actually held their muskets with any particular competence.
But in the right direction, that's the start.
Yes, they knew where to point the business end. Yes. Picard then confronts Q in his ready room. Q sits in his chair, reading one of Shakespeare's works. Picard asks why Q is demonstrating a need for humans through this confrontation, instead of providing a simple, direct explanation and a statement of what it is that he seeks. Through Q's recitation, Picard understands that how humans respond to a game tells him more about them. Q proposes to continue and quotes some Hamlet for him. Picard refuses and quotes him instead. What a piece of work is man, how noble in reason, how infinite in faculty, in form, in moving, how express and admirable, in action, how like an angel, in apprehension, how like a god. Q stands up in objection from his chair and responds that surely Picard doesn't see humanity like that. Picard answers that he sees humanity as one day becoming like that, and perhaps that is what the Q fear. Q, obviously irritated by Picard, throws the large Shakespeare book at him and then disappears. And I'm like, yeah, have that.
So the book, I recognize the book, is that the complete work of Shakespeare or something?
Probably, yes. It's quite a decent sized book, so you could probably fit everything in there.
I think I have that same book around here.
Ah, somewhere. Nice. What, the actual one that Q threw at Picard?
No. That's because that's what I would keep this one under a glass. But no,
Yes. There's a lot of childish traits in the way that Q acts.
Yes.
The fact that he's making everything a game, the way that he is quite infantile in his use of language and how he taunts the Enterprise crew. But then, because things aren't going his way, he's essentially stormed off and slammed the door.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. 100% agree with that.
So it is interesting, particularly if he's supposed to be the more he believes he's the more intelligent being, whereas in reality, I don't think he's anywhere near us.
No, he's just omnipotent, but that doesn't make him the most intelligent creature in the world, in the universe.
Omnipotent but stupid.
Yeah. Dangerous combination.
Yes. Back in Q's game, Data explains that muskets are inferior to their phasers. The muskets, however, turn out to have phaser power. Q did say it wasn't going to be fair, didn't he?
Yeah.
Q, appearing as Data before Riker, tells him that he now has the power of the Q and is able to transport his crewmates back to the ship. He does so and is amazed.
Who wouldn't be?
No, exactly. So this was what I predicted when Q was talking to Picard about the gift that he was going to give him. He's given the power of the Q to Riker. What could go wrong?
Well, actually, I don't want to go too far ahead, but I thought Riker would manage that quite well.
I would have thought so as well. However, we have three more acts to go. Just want to pull back to the YouTube chat for a moment. Lainey said, when we were talking about Yar and the fact that she's not being given a particularly fulfilling role within the either as a character or also her role on the Enterprise itself. She says it was the 1980s. Women weren't allowed to be strong physical characters. And I kind of agree and disagree to that one. But I think it's not just the 1980s. I think it's also the military aspect as well. Because certainly in military history, the idea of having a female officer, because she is an officer, it's not something that was particularly prolific at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
Could do with Nate's input on this one.
Nate's input, yeah. I think it's changed, and that women are more prominent characters in the military right now. Whatever country, I don't not necessarily in the US, but in every country. But I don't think they are equals to men yet. And I don't even think they will ever be in the military. It's really a man thing.
Yeah, I don't really want to go too deep down this rabbit hole because I could actually end up getting myself into trouble. But I think a lot of it, it's not just about the male-female thing. I think there's no particular reason why there couldn't be an equal number of males and females within the military. However, there's also the physical aspect of it.
True.
The biological makeup of females do not necessarily lend themselves to that kind of physical torment, particularly in terms of the training they have to go through to get there.
Yes, I agree. Not all positions could be equally filled by men and women.
Precisely, yes.
Yes.
And to be fair, that's the same across the whole of industry. It's not just in the military, it's across everything. But equally, there are some jobs that, you know, aren't particularly suited to men either. Unfortunately, it's kind of in male favour.
Yes.
Right, so we are on Act 3. Or in Act 3. Or at Act 3. I don't know. Choose one. Edit it in.
No.
Back aboard the Enterprise, all systems are again functioning, and the Q grid has disappeared. There's no sign that anything has happened, and no others have noticed anything. Data, LaForge, and Worf appear back on the bridge, where Picard explains to them that Q has shown some kind of interest in their first officer, but he has no idea why.
But we do.
We do. We do.
Yes.
Back on the planetoid, Riker is laughing heartily about something, and Q becomes curious until Riker says that he's laughing at him. Riker and Q discuss the powers that Q has granted him. Interestingly, the rank insignia that Q now carries on his uniform is that of a Starfleet commander, implying that Riker and Q are now equals. Riker asks what Q wants from him. He replies that the Continuum has granted him a gift beyond all other gifts. Riker doesn't understand what that means, and Q says that he never will until he becomes one of them. He explains that before Farpoint Station, they saw humanity as savages only. However, they discovered instead that humans are unusual creatures in their own limited ways. He also states that since humans are constantly evolving, they may eventually become stronger than the Q one day. That's why they've selected Riker to join the Q, to help them better understand the human need and hunger. So this appears to be all about fear. The Q are scared of what the humans may become.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of was the point of the discussion with Picard earlier, that they fear that one day they will evolve beyond what the Q continuum is, or what the Q are, however you want to say that.
Is, because Q is a singular.
So the Q is. Which means to me that however omnipotent the continuum is, it has stopped evolving. And now it fears everything that might end up being better than them.
Okay, so then the question I would have there is, what's the gameplay? Because there are two ways this can work. The way that Q is saying, where the Continuum want to know more about... Sorry, I've got to correct myself. The Continuum wants to know more about the human condition and how they can be more like them, or they want to know how to bring humans down. They see the threat and they want to eliminate it, as opposed to seeing an opportunity and growing to meet it.
I think it's the second option.
To bring it down.
Know the enemy and then, you know, squash him.
Mm.
So that, I think that's what they're trying to do.
That is interesting, because that was kind of Worf's argument when he rejected the drink that Q offered him.
Yeah.
Q then quoted something maybe or maybe not written down in the Klingon code: "Do not drink with thine enemy." So Worf is already fully aware of who he's dealing with.
Yeah, I think Worf, as a member of a warrior race, already figured out what was going on.
Yeah, interesting. Riker rejects Q's powers, and Q disappears. Suddenly, the bridge crew, including Picard, but also Wesley, appear on the planetoid's surface again, while they are approached by the soldier creatures that Q created. Now unarmed, only Riker's powers can save the crew. Worf is stabbed by a bayonet from one of the animal soldiers, and after Wesley runs to his rescue, the acting ensign is killed as well. Frustrated and angry, Riker uses his newfound powers to create a Q-style force field around the soldiers and then transports the crew back to the Enterprise, healing Worf and Wesley in the process. Picard is stunned, claiming that only the Q can do what Riker did. Riker just stands there, arms crossed, looking smug.
Yeah, I didn't like that. I was like, no, why? I mean, it's Riker. 5 seconds before, he was acting normal, and now he's like Q. I mean, standing exactly like Q would.
Exactly that. Exactly that. And I didn't know whether at that particular point, maybe there was an element of Q actually... There's a word I'm thinking of, and I can't think of it. Influencing.
Yeah, they're all interconnected. I mean, Q is the continuum.
Yeah, it's kind of like a
the Borg,
non-technical Borg. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought the transition was too quick. I mean, they could have done that gradually, but I don't know. I didn't like that. Yet again, I didn't like much of this episode. So.
And I agree with you that it was rushed, and I think this may have been one of those times where they could have done this across two episodes. They could have arced it across it because...
Please, no.
No, but I think the journey that Riker's going through and being able... we were able to see the change between the Riker we know and the Riker that is driven by Q. Whereas I think it would have been a lot better from a storyline perspective to have not seen that so obviously, to see him gradually being turned and gradually being more and more influenced by the Q.
If you watch what we've left behind, the DS9 documentary, there's an interview in there between I don't remember the name of the director, but anyway, with one of the executive from CBS, was it CBS Paramount? I don't know, I don't remember, who produced DS9 at the time, and they were talking about the fact that DS9 went to a serialized form, as in from I think season 3 or 4, I don't remember, that the storyline was going from one episode to the other in a very serial fashion. And they said that the director of the showrunner did that despite the fact that the network didn't want to do that, because at the time they didn't want any of the series to be serialized, because they didn't want the audience to have to watch every episode in a specific order. So that might explain why we don't have a serialized story in Next Gen, because it was something that was not made on TV at the time, which I learned by watching What We've Left Behind. So it was on purpose that every episode was a single entity with pretty much no relationship to anything else. You might have some references here and there from a previous episode, but nothing goes from one week to the other to the next, because they just didn't do that at the time.
No, and we've already mentioned before about the series so far that there are some things that should have been referenced from episode to episode that haven't been. So, yeah, okay, we know that Wesley's acting ensign, we know the episode in which that occurred. But the other things that Wesley's done...
Yeah, ignored.
...have been completely ignored.
Yes.
So although the characters are being carried over across episode to episode, which is why I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens in Haven, because that was the fourth one produced out of the first series, and I don't think Wesley was an acting ensign at that point, so I'll be interested to see how they approach mm-hmm. that. Indeed, whether there's any need to reference that in the storyline of next week.
Yeah. So that's something I've learned by watching this documentary, which once again is very, very, very interesting. I think if you haven't seen Deep Space Nine, it could be very interesting to watch.
It's more about the production, I presume, rather than
yes.
Yeah. Then yeah, yes. I'd probably enjoy that then. So on to Act 4 then. The Enterprise, meanwhile, has arrived at the mining colony. In Picard's ready room, Riker gives Picard his word that he will be strong enough not to use the power of the Q, no matter how hard Q makes it for him. An announcement from Data interrupts the conversation, advising Picard that they are now in orbit of Quadra Sigma 3. An away team beams down to the mining colony, and they find a small group of people seriously injured. LaForge finds a young child underneath some rocks. Dr. Crusher says it is too late and that the child has died. Riker is faced with the dilemma of whether to bring the child back to life, but he says that he's prevented from doing so by a promise that he made. He shows his frustration to Picard on the Enterprise and surprisingly demands a meeting with the senior staff. Now, his exact words were, "You and your bridge staff." So either Riker has managed to detach himself from the crew already, as in he's not considering himself part of the Q, or that's Q speaking.
No, I think it's the first one.
Okay. Because I was going down the route of considering that perhaps Q has made Riker his spy, his eyes and ears on the Enterprise.
No, I think he's been corrupted by Q's power. Mm. Yeah. So when the away team went on the planet, all they did was open the door. And I was wondering, why didn't the people inside open the door to go out?
No handle on the inside. They couldn't open.
Okay, let's go with that.
I haven't got a clue.
No. Okay. And also, I think it was LaForge who said there's something here mm-hmm. Where the child was.
Yep.
But if it was too late, how can he, notice something moving or maybe just saw something with his
eyes? He might have picked up a heat signature or something.
Yeah.
But would the visor have picked up a life form? Would it have picked up that the child was alive? Because if it did, then he would have known already that the child was dead.
Yeah. I don't know.
I have no idea, no concept of the capability of the visor.
No, it's strange. We know it can pick up a lot of wavelength and it seems to be doing something new every episode.
Yeah, because it's more like a radar.
Yeah.
A multispectral radar than anything
like
else.
The one of the Cylons.
Yeah. Yeah. Or Kit.
Oh, Kit. Yeah. Actually, I have a theory that Kit is a Cylon, but
okay.
No one wants to believe me.
No.
Soon, from the Other Side Podcast Network, a review of Knight Rider.
I am Knight Rider so 2000. In.
Yeah.
No, not.
But
not
I refuse to review. Yeah. No. I refuse to review Knight Rider 2000.
Did you see the new newer series about 10 years ago?
Yeah, Knight Rider 2000.
No. Knight Rider 2000 was a film.
Oh, so I was talking about the new series.
Oh, right. You don't like
the
that?
The newest series. No.
With Kilmer. Oh, no, I enjoyed it. I thought it was good.
With the car that
the Mustang.
Can morph into
yes.
a...
Into an
morph
SUV.
Morph into a SUV? Yeah. No. Well, it was cancelled after a year, I think. something like that.
Yeah, only made one series, which is a shame because it was. I liked it. It was a really good series. I thought it was going to be awful, and it wasn't.
Alright, maybe I should watch it again.
But the first episode was good.
The first episode was good because you were. I was like, yeah, it's going to be we're going to see Kit again and things like that. And I liked the first episode.
We did. We saw the original Kit for about 4 seconds.
Yes. In the garage.
In the garage, yes.
Yeah, in the garage, yes. Mm. But we saw David Hasselhoff.
No, seriously, for the record, I know we've spoken before about other TV series and joked about it. I would so be up for a review series of Knight Rider, end to end, from pilot to the end of season 4. I'm all in.
Well, you know what? We've got to do this TV series review show that we've been talking about for ages.
But no, I think we should do it should be a Knight Rider series, not a TV review series. This is a Knight Rider series.
All right, and then what's next? Airwolf?
Airwolf, Blue Thunder, Street Hawk. Do you remember Street Hawk?
Yeah. Blue Thunder, really?
Yeah. Blue Thunder was more like it was that mid spot between Knight Rider and Airwolf. In the middle was Blue Thunder.
Yeah.
The similarities between the two.
Absolutely, yeah. But Blue Thunder is the sequel of a movie. There was a movie before the series.
There was, yes.
Which is not that bad.
There again,
actually.
Wasn't there, Airwolf was a film first, wasn't it? Or was it a series? Oh, I can't remember now.
I don't know.
Anyway,
but what was the name of the one with the motorbike?
Street Hawk.
Did you say Street Hawk?
Yes,
Street Hawk. Yes.
That was moderately awful,
they should have made a crossover between Knight Rider, Airwolf, and Street Hawk.
I don't even know whether they were part of the same.
Doesn't matter. They should have done this.
Production company. No. There was no.
There actually are similarities between Knight Rider and Star Trek. I just thought of that. Kit as an evil brother, Car.
Yes, Car. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
So that Data Lore in Star Trek. Yep. Kit and Car in Knight Rider.
Interesting.
Interesting.
And of course, you know that Car was voiced by Peter Cullen, who was also played Optimus Prime in the Transformer films.
Ah, no, I didn't know that.
Ah, every day's a score. This is why Knight Rider's a good one to pursue. Anyway, leave as much of that in as you want.
Well, we'll leave the whole thing.
Excellent, excellent. Okay.
So that means less work for me.
Just publish the whole thing. The senior staff, including Wesley, meet on the bridge. Riker explains that even though he has been granted unusual powers, he is not a monster, and that he is still the same William T. Riker they know. Picard reminds him that he has already changed, for example, by not addressing him as Captain. He called him Jean-Luc at least twice, possibly three times.
Yes.
Riker doubts that his decision not to save the child was right, comparing to when he saved the Enterprise crew earlier. However, Picard reminds him that it was a fiction that Q created. He tries to convince Riker that the Q do not admire humans, but they have muddled Riker's mind.
Yeah, I think we've established that.
Yeah. Just then, Q appears as a medieval monk on the bridge, asking Riker, "Are these truly your friends, brother?" I was kind of right. Well, we were kind of right, yeah.
He's now part of the... he considers himself being part of the continuum.
Mm.
I was... It was strange, the relationship between Wesley and the rest of the bridge crew. I mean, he was there, and then Riker told him, "Not you." Why? I mean, as Wesley said, he was an acting ensign. So
absolutely, he had every right to be there.
Yeah. So,
but maybe that was Riker actually trying to protect him, because what was the actual phrase? Yeah, you and your bridge staff was the actual phrase he used. Now, bridge staff and senior staff are not the same because of Wesley.
Yes.
And the engineer. And, yeah.
Yeah, and Wesley said, you made me an acting ensign, but that doesn't necessarily mean bridge staff. I mean, there's a lot of acting ensign and ensign on the Enterprise that are not bridge crew or bridge staff.
No, but he kind of has a seat on the on the bridge.
Right.
It's right next to Troy. A ledge next to Troy. I can think of worse places to be, just saying.
Yeah.
But yeah, I get you. I think you're right. I don't think Wesley should have been there for his own safety, if nothing else. But I kind of admire the way he stood up for himself.
Yeah. Now, from a writer's point of view, he had to be there because he's the only one who, played along with what's coming next.
No, he's not. There were at least two others. Temporary.
Yes, but
not physical changes, but...
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Agree. But I thought, Wesley didn't... Well, we'll talk when we review the scene.
No, I think Wesley had to be there to make the scene have more impact.
Yeah.
But he probably shouldn't have been. So, final act, Act 5.
Finally.
Standing serenely on the bridge, Q, dressed as a monk, invites the crew to pray for understanding and compassion. Picard says he'll do no such damn thing and furiously asks Q why he takes on so many guises. Have you no identity of your own, he says. Q retorts, I forgive you your blasphemy. Picard actually...
But he didn't answer, actually.
No, he doesn't. But I think his arrogance is that he doesn't feel he has to answer any of the questions that he's given.
Yeah, I think he's deflecting.
Oh,
that
he
indeed doesn't have a real identity of him, a real image, that the Q we see is only a projection that he took for interacting with humans.
Mm.
And that he indeed doesn't have a real identity. Being part of a continuum makes that an impossibility.
Yes. I mean, he does have his own form. He's got a humanoid form, but that is not an identity. The fact that he changes his appearance and his perceived standing, rank, manner, bearing, whatever you want to call it, every time we see him, he either doesn't know what he is or he just likes playing games.
Yeah. A little bit of both, probably.
Yeah. Picard actually seems highly amused by this and asks Riker if he can see that Q is nothing more than a flimflam man, a charlatan. Q accuses Picard of jealousy and asks how he can claim to be Riker's friend if he's obstructing him. Q then encourages Riker to demonstrate the love of his people by giving them a gift, proving his affection. Picard thinks this is a great idea and supports Q's plan, advising his crew that they may participate should they wish. Picard is doing my head in. He really is, because he's the level of cynicism and sarcasm that he's demonstrating at the moment is right off the scale. I know what he's doing. Yeah. I know we find out later on what he's actually attempting to do, but even at this point, I knew what he was getting at. But I don't know. By being too compliant to what Q is what the game that Q is playing, he's being too obvious, and yet Q is just not seeing it.
No, because Q is so sure of himself. It doesn't even question the fact that Picard now fully agrees with him. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a trap, but he doesn't see it.
No. And Riker wouldn't see it because he's blinkered to the reality of what's happening.
Well, he's essentially part of the Q continuum.
Yeah.
So
he's
like Q.
Dr. Crusher asks Wesley to leave with her. Riker, however, knowing that his young friend wishes he was older, turns Wesley into an adult, aging him 10 years in an instant. What?
Yeah, and the same sweater that already doesn't fit with a young child doesn't fit with an older kid.
No.
That person we fired twice already, the person in charge of the wardrobe, should, once again, sorry, but you're out.
Yeah. But the actor that played 10 years older Wesley, very good, because he got all of Wesley's mannerisms, his expressions, spot on. I did try and see whether we were actually hearing Will Wheaton's voice over the top of the older actor lip syncing.
I think so.
And it wasn't. He was speaking.
No? Really?
So, well, as an actor,
he's got a voice close to you.
Yeah, exactly. He got that almost spot on. It may have, if it was a dubbing, then it was perfect. I don't think it was. So
maybe
props to the actor.
Maybe the actor was Will Wheaton's older brother.
maybe. Never actually looked to see who it was. And now I'm going to have to check. Oh, it doesn't tell me. Oh, here we go. Also acting. Wesley Crusher, age 25. William A. Wallace. Not William Wallace, as in as in the Scottish person. He's got 15 actor credits on IMDb. All for things that I have
never seen.
Oh, he was in Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh.
Yes. Credited as Beverly Hills Cop number 2.
Oh, I like this one. Number 1 was okay. Number 2 was good.
Yeah. Riker offers to make Data human, but Data declines, saying that it would never feel real to him. Data then quotes Shakespeare to drive his point home, saying, "This above all, to thine own self be true." That is that is a more human response than a human would do.
Yes.
That is not the response of an AI.
No. Yeah, that adds to the weirdness.
Riker then walks to LaForge, granting him his vision. After taking in the view of Quadra Sigma 3 and taking a long look at Tasha Yar's beautiful face...
Yeah, what's up with Tasha?
No. Let me finish the line, and then I do have something to say on this.
Okay.
LaForge also declines Riker's gift, telling the commander that the price is too high, and he does not like who he has to thank. That was a really good line.
Yeah.
I like that. So, two things off of this. Firstly, where did the connectors go?
Well, if Riker can give him his vision back, he can remove the connectors. I mean,
but
he doesn't need them.
He removed the visor from his face.
Mm-hmm.
So the connectors would have still been there. Otherwise, the visor would have fallen off his face. But then when he put the visor back on again, he gave the visor to Geordi. And then all of a sudden,
yes,
bing, the connectors came back.
the connectors came back when he passed his hand in front of Jordi's eyes, and then the eyes were white again and the connectors were there.
Well, it was a really bad bit of editing, but yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
1987.
Gonna have to stop using that as an excuse at some point. The other thing, Jordi said that Tasha was more beautiful than he could have imagined.
Yeah.
How could he have imagined what she looked like if he had no concept of what she may have looked like in the first place?
Yeah, well, that's not what I was reacting to. I was reacting to the fact that, yeah, you know, why he thought she was beautiful. I mean, what's wrong with that? Is she going to, you know, seduce everyone on the ship?
I mean, well, this is where I was going, getting to yeah. earlier on. I mean, don't get me wrong. She is pretty.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It just seems really, really odd. Didn't they have a moment before? Was that was Jordi, wasn't it?
Yes, when Jordi came back from the ship, he was the first infected, and he was trying to watch the stars.
He was watching out through the mm-hmm. observation lounge.
Yes.
Yes. So maybe that's what started it. But again, how would he have known? How could he have known what anything around him looked like? If his vision is interpreted by the visor, and we've already known by something he said before, that the visor isn't showing him things as human eyes do.
No. His brain is interpreting the signals.
Yeah, they're electrical signals coming in, not through visual means. So,
which brings the question, how can he see anything on the screens? Because if the visor sends, you know, like a radar, like you know, the ultrasonic sensor, like a bat, or I don't know, heat and things like that.
Yes.
The screen will be just a flat surface.
Yeah,
and probably don't see anything on the screen. But that's for another.
But if show. if let's take your example of a bat. If a bat could suddenly see with its eyes, don't you think it would be like?
Yeah, that's true. It couldn't make, you know, understand what he would see.
Precisely.
Let's just say that Riker also gave LaForge the ability to understand what his eyes were transmitting to his brain.
Oh, then that's fine then. That's all good. Now, I love this scene. Riker then creates a Klingon female as a mate for Worf. Worf starts what I can only describe as some form of seduction ritual, which he punctuates by smacking the female to the floor. She starts growling and approaches Worf on all fours before he seemingly comes to his senses and refuses the female as a gift, claiming there is no place in his life for her. Now, My quote phrase section of the week is here. All right? It's two lines. I've added a third. Geordi said, "Is this your idea of sex?" Worf said, "This is sex." I said, "On the bridge?"
In front of everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a hilarious scene, but
yeah,
really, get a room.
Yeah, especially when when they were growling and things like that. It's weird.
It brings context to something that Worf said a couple of episodes ago. I can't remember. They were on a planet somewhere where Riker asked Worf about
last episode.
Was it the last episode? Riker mm-hmm. asked Worf about relationships and about females and maybe finding a human female. And he said that human females are too fragile for his style of mating ritual. Now yes. I understand why. Everything becomes clear now.
Didn't the Klingon female try to attack Tasha when she saw Tasha behind Worf? And I think she was trying to...
Yeah, she would have seen her as a threat.
Yes, that.
But...
So does that count as one of Tasha's love interest?
What, Worf?
Yes.
Okay, so Data, Picard, Geordi, Worf. That's four.
Uh-huh. Well, no.
Few females to go yet.
Didn't she make a pass at Troy in the Naked Now?
Probably.
Yeah. So, Crusher and Riker, and we're all good.
Yeah, she's going to end up with a name for herself. Not a nice one at that.
No.
Floozy. Wesley also asks Riker to make him young again. It isn't until Q says, "But it's easier, boy, listen to Riker," that Riker realises what his mistake is. He admits that he feels like a fool, and Picard comforts him by confirming that he should.
Yeah, that was funny.
Picard then walks up to Q, pulls off his hood, and tells him to uphold their wager. Q stomps around the bridge, recalling no wager. Picard replies that his fellow Q will remember that because he failed to turn Riker. He'll promise to stay out of humanity's way forever. Thunder sounds on the Enterprise bridge and Q is abruptly called back to the Continuum, screaming for a second chance. "You are the weakest link. Goodbye."
Yeah, that's one thing that's good with the Continuum is that they don't let Q do whatever he wants.
Mm.
He made a promise to Picard, and they will make him uphold his promise.
It's the first time we've actually seen that the Continuum actually making some form of action. Mm-hmm. Like, we knew they existed, but up to now it has just been Q. The character Q rather than the Continuum.
True. It's not the last time we saw the Continuum acting to make Q,
mm-hmm.
you know, uphold a promise or something he said he would do and didn't want to do because he's Q. But the Continuum is watching him.
Mm. Are all representatives of the Q, the ones that we call Q, are they all the same person? Are they the same actor, I know, but are they the same person?
No, they're not the same actor.
Are they not the same actor? We see other Qs?
No. Yes.
Ah, okay. Interesting.
Not too many, but Q, as in John Delancey, is the one we see most of the time.
Right. But if there is a Q played by another actor, is it the same Q or is it a different entity of the Q? A different representative of the Q? Is there such a thing as a separate entity or are they all one thing?
I don't know. In the episodes I recall, they refer themselves to themselves as Q. So it's hello Q, hello Q, how are you? So... I don't know.
Well, Q never referred to himself as Q. He introduced himself as the Q. I think he said, "We call ourselves the Q."
Yes.
So the name Q was actually given to him by Picard.
Yeah, if you say so, I don't remember.
No, I don't know. Hmm. Anyway, last scene of the episode. For the Enterprise crew, it is as if they had just returned from their rescue mission, like no time had passed in between. Data asks the captain how the Q can handle space and time so well, while they handle interactions with humans so badly. Picard answers that they may one day learn that space and time are easier to handle than the human equation. I think everything. Quantum physics is easier than the human equation.
Yeah.
So, a couple of things. Is Riker Riker now, not Riker? I made that one up myself. What? R-I-Q-E-R. I did that one myself. Riker. So is Riker Riker again? Is he himself?
Apparently.
Because there was nothing.
Even though we have no evidence of that.
No,
but
there was nothing to indicate that he'd become powerless.
No.
So I suppose we'll find out. But there again, if these are standalone episodes, then everything will just get reset, won't it?
Yeah.
Then my next question is relevant to the same thing. Picard said, we have no coordinates. There are no coordinates programmed in to Riker. And then Riker said to Geordi, you have my coordinates? To which Geordi said, yes.
Yeah.
How did he get those coordinates?
I don't know, but I thought about what you said last episode or the episode before, when Picard said, Riker, take us out, and he didn't say anything, and he didn't do anything, and then they were on their way. So I guess it's just a meme at this point where Picard tells Riker, okay, do something, and Riker says, okay, it's done. But yeah, it's true.
Delegation of action is one thing, like it was in the last episode or the one before it. But this is a specific thing where Picard said there are no coordinates programmed in. And then Riker suddenly says, do you have the coordinates? To which Geordi says, yes. So either he is still Riker, and has programmed them in himself, or there may have been a prearranged set of coordinates stored in for once they've completed their mission at Quanta Sigma 3.
Maybe they have a secret code, between Riker and Geordi.
Geordi.
When he says, you have my coordinate, Geordi, and then Geordi knows what that means.
Yeah, second star to the right, straight on to a morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's a hint that Riker is still Riker.
It's good, isn't it? What did you think of the episode then?
As I said in the beginning, long, slow, boring, not unlike an episode from the 80s, an episode from a series in the 80s. So I guess at the time, it might have been a okay episode, but that's one of those who aged very badly. The only thing that was missing in this last act was, the weird music from from those movies and series of the time where there was very long scenes without any dialogues or very little dialogues, and then some kind of 80s music background.
I know exactly what you mean.
On
Sunday, we binge-watched about four episodes of Columbo.
Yeah.
And they used to do that a lot. I mean, bearing in mind this was between 71 and 76, I think the first batch of series were, before it came back in the 1990s. And they did a lot of it because they were all single camera productions.
Mm-hmm.
So everything had to be shot multiple times to perform to create the composite of a given scene. And you saw a lot of this looking at one person, looking at the other person. First person speaks, second person speaks, look at second person. And you're doing a lot of this filling. I mean, they're 90-something minute episodes, so you have to fill them out with something, particularly if there's not that strong a storyline. But, yeah, you always have this... Either or, well, in the 1980s, it would either be electronic music or some
synthesizer thing.
Yeah, yeah. But back in the 1970s, it was orchestral. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there was, you know, when they actually played it back and you had an orchestra pit recording it live, because that's how they used to do things back in the olden days. I agree with you. I think it did seem a bit dialogue light. And I don't think there was anything wrong with the episode per se.
No. Maybe, except the set on the planet, maybe that was really poor.
Yep, agreed.
The acting was not that bad.
No,
it was a bit overacted somewhere, some places. Like when Dasha cried on the bridge, I think she was overdoing it.
Yes.
Riker, you know, taking the stand of a Q, I think he was overdoing it too. But other than that, no, it's nothing wrong in the acting. Mm. Nothing particularly wrong in the writing, except that it was slow and painful to watch. But not because it was bad, just because it was really slow. But again, it was it must have fitted right with everything else in the at the time.
You say it was slow, but it was also rushed.
Yes, a bit of contradictions here. Yes. So some scenes were rushed, and yet the action was very slow.
Yeah, I think from a storyline was good. It was probably one of the most entertaining episodes of the season so far for me. Humor and non-characteristic characters. So you saw amusement on Picard's face. He laughed a couple of times. He was actually quite quite animated in his involvements with the Q. I think overall we should start putting like a grading system in for these episodes. Mm-hmm. Overall, I think it was good. I enjoyed it. It was fun. I would have expected more.
Yeah, it's one of those. Well, I was gonna say one of those that we won't remember, but actually the soldiers. I did remember the soldiers as soon as the episode started. I remember the soldiers. I don't know why, because we don't see them a lot, but maybe the characteristic faces. But not the worst of the of this batch of what, 9? I don't know, 10?
10 episodes. Yeah.
But yeah, definitely not one of the best ones either. So not one I would enjoy rewatching in the next few weeks. But yeah, I wouldn't mind watching it again in a year or two.
Yeah, just to remind yourself of how bad it actually is.
Yeah, well, you need to watch the bad ones to, you know, appreciate the good ones.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Not that we're going to have time to watch these episodes again, because we've got so many episodes yet to watch, the 14-odd years of episodes to go, and the entire four-season run of Knight Rider as well. So
yeah. Well, maybe we can, you know, do a condensed review of Knight Rider. I don't feel like doing, you know, 100 episodes? Something like that?
Yeah, I think there were 22 in each series.
Yeah, so I don't feel like doing 4 years of...
Then the 2008 series, then the three films.
Yeah. So, no, not every week.
No, maybe not.
Not enough time for that.
Anyway, so unless you've got anything else on this, then we shall draw to a close our review of Star Trek The Next Generation, Season 1, Episode 10, Hide and Q. Well, thank you very much indeed to everyone who has downloaded our previous episodes. We very much appreciate you spending your time to listen to our incessant ramblings. You can help us spread the love for our show by writing a song featuring our website address and submitting it into your national competition for the Eurovision Song Contest 2021. Or if you already know that you'll have no chance of winning because of this podcast's association with the United Kingdom, then you can simply post our website address on social media.
Though if you do write a song, please send it to us.
Yes.
We have a lot of music shows. Well, a lot. We have one music show on the Other Side Podcast Network. And if your song is released under a Creative Commons license, then I'm sure the hosts of said show will be happy to play it.
We have two shows that feature music on the Other Side Podcast Network.
That feature music? Yes.
Yes. We've got Tux Jam as well.
Yes, Tux Jam.
Yes.
And CC Jam.
Oh, yeah. CC Jam is three then. Three.
So that's three. Mm-hmm.
It's like
three running.
It's like the Spanish Inquisition, isn't it?
Yes.
Our chief weapon is surprise. Surprise and fear. Although we did have two more music podcasts on the Other Side Podcast Network until someone just let them go.
Well, you know, there's only so many hours in the week. So.
No, I get it.
Our website is tlgreyhot.org, and that's the place where you can find our show notes, our reviews, and leave a comment for every episode.
You can send us an email. Our address is feedback@tlgreyhot.org. We love to get your feedback. We do read everything that we receive, and unless you tell us otherwise, we may well read your email or parts of it out on the show.
If you're more of a social media creature, you can follow us on Twitter. We are at TEGH Podcast. We are also on Telegram at t.me/TEGH Podcast. And that's the only place where you'll get the link to our unlisted live stream. And really, you want to watch the stream. By the way, we didn't mention Lainey, who was with us on the YouTube chat tonight. Good evening, Lainey, our social media manager, who did, I've seen that she's posted four posts on Facebook for us this week. So thank you, Lainey.
She's making us look good. Can we like stop her or something?
Yeah.
No, thank you very much indeed, Lainey. Appreciate it. Thanks also to Memory Alpha. As always, we have based our review of this week's episode reasonably loosely on their work, and their review is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution non-commercial license.
The rest of the show is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution share-alike license. You can see our website for all the details.
This Ear podcast is part of the Other Side Podcast Network. We've said that a few times in this show. if you want to find out what that is all about and check out our other shows, you can find out full details at otherside.network.
Our next episode will be a review of Star Trek The Next Generation Season 1, Episode 11, Heaven.
And this is the point where I need to remind you that although this is the 11th episode that we are reviewing of this season of The Next Generation, it is the fourth one that was produced. So
yeah,
we may well have some things to talk about in terms of production quality next week.
And continuity and all that.
Yeah. Although looking at the preview image in the Memory Alpha article for this episode, it looks like we're going to have another one of those original series planetary sets to contend with.
Well, we'll see. Also, we have missed Picard Day
yesterday,
as we were supposed to be recording yesterday, but I didn't feel very well, as we mentioned at the beginning of this episode. So we pushed this recording this evening. So we've missed Picard Day, which was yesterday at the time of recording.
No, 2 days ago.
Wednesday this... 2 days ago? Mm. Oh, so we would have missed it anyway.
Yes, we would have.
So it was on the 16th of June. Mm. Okay. Yeah, so 16th of June was Picard Day. So maybe next year we'll do a special live public stream for Picard's Day.
Indeed. Don't forget, on last week's episode, we did invite you to send in your pictures of Captain Picard, or even pictures and models of us, your erstwhile hosts. and post them to us on Twitter. Use the hashtag #TEGHPicardDay.
Yeah. Also, you can send us ideas for our introduction and outro, you know, those things, the distance or things between Dave and I, or the housekeeping part, when you can help us spread the love for this show, because to be honest, we're, you know, a bit dry those days, and we struggle to find interesting stuff to write. Not that we've ever written something interesting, but we have a bit of a struggle. So if you have any ideas for that, please send us a mail at feedback@tlgrayhot.org.
Excellent.
And that brings us to the end of this week's edition of the podcast. Thank you, Dave, for joining me again. Once again,
my pleasure.
Even though I threaten to fire you every week,
every single week, yes.
Every single
week. We should keep a score, actually, because I think I might have threatened to fire you twice over the last 45 episodes. And I'll never let you forget that either.
No, well, I guess it's time we end this show. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We will be back next week with a whole bunch more of Star Trek. Until then, take care of yourselves. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. As in, thank you.
Ah, I see what you did there.
Yeah, I won't do it again. I've done a lot of rewrites, and now I can't actually read what I've written.
Now you need to do a reread.
I don't. But he now has the power of the Q, and is able to transport his Q mates.
His Q mates?
No. I was saying that Yannick doesn't count, yes.
What? Ladies and gentlemen, I am looking for a new co-host for this show.
Every week! In Picard's Ready Rood.
That's where the Q-mates meet.
What, the Ready Rood?
Yes.
I don't know, would the wiser... The wiser?
The wiser of the Q-mates in the Ready Rood.
You've been listening to a member of the Other Side Podcast Network. Find more about our shows at othersidenetwork.com.